Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Folks, happy Black History Month. Let's keep going, folks. Black History Month started on Saturday and it's February 5th. What have you done to help push the message of Black History Month? I mean, what you been up to? Give me a call, 410-319-8888. There is a Facebook group. And they call themselves like New Age Reparations or something. And what they do for Black History Month, and they've been doing this for a while. But if you are a Black person and you are in need of something, you go on to this Facebook group and you fill out an application and you just tell them what you need. And then they connect you with well-meaning people not of color who want to lean in and help you. So I'm a Black person and I need a new sofa. Or I'm a Black person and I need some, I don't know, some red bottom shoes. You know, I need me a new car. And you put it online and people will look and say, okay, well, I've got some red bottom shoes, or I want to put some money towards your new car. Or I want to help you get something. That it's all about what they call New Age Reparations. Since we can't give you 40 acres and a mule and $50, let's see if we can help you get that new engine. Let's see if we can help you get that, you know, that coffee deal that you want. It's a way that people not of color are leaning in for Black folks every day of the year, but particularly during Black History Month. Well, here's the way we're going to lean in. We're going to help you put together your ultimate Black History Month playbook. We have selected some songs for our Kaopoly. Once you get the names of them, you can write them down. But this is the ultimate Black History Month playbook Kaopoly. We're going to do that, and then by that time, our lines will be ready. And so African, Clarence, and Lou, I'll be coming right to you after our Kaopoly. Let's go, Dre.
Southern trees bear strange fruit. Blood on the leaves and blood at the root. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze.
What you want, baby, I got it. What you need, you know I got it. All I'm asking is for
installment of the ultimate Black History Month Kaopoly. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Lou, a new call from downtown Baltimore. Lou, I hope your line's ready. How are you?
I am wonderful. I hope you have me nice and clear. Do you?
I can hear you nice and clear. Thank you for just holding on with us.
Oh, well, I'm hoping that this is one of the most interesting conversations that you have this year.
Thank you.
Okay, so let me introduce myself. The name is Lou Evans. I own a substance abuse clinic in downtown Baltimore. I've been an advocate for lower-income Black folks for a long time. I started a staffing company because I was so frustrated with politicians not putting low-income Black men and women to work. So I did that, and actually at one point I introduced a program that was supported by Larry Hogan for tens of millions of dollars to provide jobs for young people who had criminal histories that would not, so that would stop them from getting a job in the mainstream.
Right.
So I presented that to Catherine Pugh after she had won the primary, and she rejected it. Mm. One of the reasons, when they raided City Hall and they raided her home. They also raided a jobs program.
Right.
We later found out that there were some issues with the jobs program. The reason she rejected my jobs program was because she didn't want the scrutiny. So anyway.
Wow.
Now, the reason I called is this. We all are subject to the information we get inside our bubble. And we have a narrative in our head, and we accept information that supports that narrative. Now, one of the things that we assume is that the people in our circle identify with us. We have the same politics. We eat the same. People who really believe opposite of us, we block them. We unlike them. That type of thing.
Right.
So, all right. So now I'm one of those people that I want results from my politician.
Right. That makes sense.
Okay. So now I'm looking at the results that I'm getting from politicians when it comes to addictions treatment, jobs programs, the condition of low-income black folks. And I desperately want someone to tell me that I can get a better future for my low-income black folks from somebody on the Democrat side than I'm seeing from Donald Trump. Because at this point, I'm seeing results. I talk to people who are in the depths of their addictions, and I talk to professionals like yourself who, if they chose to, they would not have to even be involved with our folks. Now, I am watching black people, low income, upper income, well-traveled, well-educated, and people who have seemingly nothing going for them. I'm seeing them walk away from Democrats and the Democratic Party. And so I tell, when people say, well, Lou, who are you going to vote for? I say, I'm going to vote for the person that delivers results for low-income black folks.
All right. I appreciate that, Lou. Thanks for chiming in and giving us your perspective. We have Nancy on the phone from Baltimore. Nancy, how are you?
And Dr. K and yourself.
I'm doing well. So they tell me you're calling to play our Ultimate Black History Month Kaopoly.
Yes.
All right. This is exciting for me. Nancy, go ahead.
Okay, the first one was Billie Holiday, Strange Fruit. The second one was Aretha Franklin and Respect. And the third one was Bob Marley, Stand Up, Get Up for Your Rights.
Oh, no, Nancy, I'm sorry.
What did I miss?
I can't tell you. Other people might be playing. But what I can do, Nancy, if nobody gets it by 4:30, then the prize goes to you. So hold on 1 second. Dre, get Nancy's information. If nobody gets it, it goes to you. But it's still open on the table. We have African on the phone from Baltimore. African, how are you?
Wanted to remember the Black History Month?
Yes.
Bob Marley.
Yes.
What can we do to, can you state some facts about Bob Marley?
Well, we actually made sure, because I know Bob Marley's birthday is tomorrow, I made sure that with my Ultimate Black History Month playbook, that's why we added in songs by Bob Marley in terms of looking at his music. I've been playing it a lot for the last couple of days. Did you just want to celebrate the fact that tomorrow's his birthday? Is that what you want to do?
I'm a Rastaman just like he is, right?
Okay.
So we have unity amongst each other. He was a Rastafarian.
Yeah.
And so now he is the one that made reggae popular.
Yes, I mean,
Before him, people weren't really into reggae. They was more so into Motown.
Right.
Now, this Saturday on WAA, Jammy always has reggae, 10 to 2.
Right.
Every Saturday on WAA, the reggae music.
Yes.
And he had a camp where people would come to his camp. I mean, people all over the world would come to his camp and get information about the culture, because that's where we suffer most. We don't know about our culture.
Right.
You know, our lifestyle. Our culture is our lifestyle passed down to us from the Most High. So I wanted to remember him.
He
would never be forgotten. And then now his sons is on the scene.
Right.
Ziggy Marley, I seen
him
live.
Oh, Ziggy Marley, yes. His music is amazing.
Many sons, you see.
Rita Marley, her music, she's not a son, but her music is amazing. I just want to tell people, if you're looking for the music of Bob Marley, which, I mean, you should know Get Up, Stand Up. You should know No Women, No Cry. Like, you should know these songs. But you want to go back to 1963. I always encourage people, African, to go back to when it was Bob Marley and the Wailers.
Yeah.
And go take a listen to the Wailing Wailers, like that first album from 1965.
Uh-huh.
And listen to the song. song One Love, People Get Ready. Like, if you really want to hear the music that set Bob Marley apart, the way he became ultimately popular on the charts, it is that song there, the kind of a crossover song that really sparked his leap into international stardom. It was after that, of course, I mean, 1965 and 1970, when Bob Marley had his conversion to Rastafarianism. I mean, I looked him up when I was in Jamaica, and I used to take a look at him back when I was in college.
Yeah.
And when I traveled to Ethiopia, traveled to Shashamani, which is a very large Rastafarian community, getting the history of Bob Marley, the history of reggae music, but also the history of Rastafarianism. Exactly what is that, and what is the understanding around that? So
it's
go
Haile
get that.
Haile Selassie. Like the Christ.
Right, which is why I went to Ethiopia to do the research there. But tell people, you know, go get Naughty Dread. Go listen to the music. Before you even get into Ziggy Marley, before you get into Rita Marley, you got to start with Bob Marley and the Wailers and listen to his music.
Happy New Year.
To you as well. Have a good day. Thank you so much. We have William on the phone. William's a new caller from Columbia. William, how are you? Welcome to the family.
I'm doing fine, Dr. K.
I'm so glad you called. So if I'm not mistaken, you were calling for Kayopoli.
Yes.
All right. Well, I am interested to see if you can shut this down, because we had Nancy and it didn't work for her, but she's holding on if you don't get it. So go ahead, William. Shut it down.
Okay. The first one was Billie Holiday, Strange Fruit, Aretha Franklin, Respect, and Bob Marley, Get Up, Stand Up.
There you go. The reason why Nancy did, she said Stand Up, Get Up. And, you know, you got to say the name right. William, I'm so glad you called. We have a prize for you. Can you hold on 1 second so they can get your information?
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much, sir. We have Carlton on the phone. Sorry, not Carlton. We have Lolly on the phone from Woodlawn. Lolly, how are you?
How you doing, Dr. K?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Yeah, I was trying to see if I could tie in yesterday with today. All right, so the whole thing where I'm going at with this, so do you think the whole image of a white Jesus would kind of give white people this thinking that they can call police on black people and things of that nature, which you were talking about earlier?
Right. I do think, I mean, it's interesting for folks who didn't join us yesterday, we had this conversation about what color is your God. And we were able to trace the understanding through this Stanford University study that said when you associate God's color in your mind as white and as male, then that does transfer into how you see white men in this country. It's being better than, it's being more important, it's being more intelligent. Okay, so with that in place, what we're looking at, Lolly, and how it's connected is the ways in which over time there's been this narrative built around black men in particular and black people more in general that we are dangerous, that we are threatening, that we must be contained, we must be policed, we must be controlled, and therefore the behavior that you see is only a response to that. If you get on the elevator and a white woman grabs her purse, it's not that you've done anything. It's the narrative around black men that she is reacting to. If you go to a store and you're being followed through the store, you have not done anything. It's the narrative around black people that person is responding to. And that is part of that narrative, is in the ways in which we view who is acceptable, who is not, who is respectable, who is not, who deserves to be here and who does not.
Right, which would, you know, make a white male think that he could put his hands on a older black woman that's like 70-something, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
We see that play out in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. Last but not least, just wanted to tell Justina, her name should stand for Just Great, because she's definitely an amazing person.
Thank you. I would tell her you said that. Thank you so much, Lolly. I appreciate you. We have Eric on the phone from West Baltimore. Eric, how are you?
Hey, how are you? To hear you on the way home after a day. We're talking about black history. Here's something interesting that I'll throw out for the family mix. My nephews came up for the holidays, and we were having some conversations, and the conversation fell into, of course, our Hollywood depiction of black folks. But I threw one in there for them and ended up showing them some stuff, the way cartoons depicted black people back in the day.
Yes, good point.
We ignore a lot of this stuff, and I ended up pulling out some stuff out of my archives for them. that they were flabbergasted. Old cartoons, and you can find them on the internet even nowadays.
Yep.
Old cartoons like Cold Black and the Seven Dwarves.
Yes.
Little Eight Ball.
Yes. Oh, my
and
word.
The stereotype overweight fat black woman with the bandana and the apron.
Black folks as enslaved beings. Yes.
As well as the African cannibals with the big lips and the bones and the noses and the hairs and that kind of stuff. And these cartoons were shown in the movies.
Yeah.
In between feature presentations. And which also helped to reinforce the stereotypes and make it even more comical. And my nephews were sitting there saying, well, I've never seen this before. And I said, well, of course you have it. You know, and after a certain time, they didn't put this stuff on television and they're banned and such, but they can be found on the internet.
Yes,
and your listeners will probably get a little bit of, particularly if you're into media and entertainment, Hollywood, that type of thing, this is a good historical perspective of animation and animation history.
Thank
and the derogatory way in which blacks were depicted in not just in Hollywood, but in animation history. Something worth having a second look at.
Okay, thank you so much. I appreciate that. Folks, it is something if you go on Google, you simply just type in the words, you know, racist cartoons from the 70s, racist cartoons from the 60s, you would be amazed at how much comes up. I also think if you take a look at some of the cartoons that you watched as a child, now that you are a woke adult, now that you are thinking more deeply about these issues, you should be able to point out and see how racist some of this material is. How do you control people? You control how they see themselves. You shape how they see themselves, which means, in a sense, you're shaping how they value themselves. We have, I believe, G on the phone. G is a first-time caller from East Baltimore. G, how are you? Welcome to the family.
Hello, hi. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I'm calling for the K-Opoly. Is it still available?
Oh, the K-Opoly is already gone.
It's already gone.
Billie Holiday, Strange Fruit, Respect, Aretha Franklin, and Bob Marley, Get Up, Stand Up.
Oh,
I'm so glad you called, though. It's your first time calling. Thank you for just joining our family.
Say it again.
I said, it's your first time calling. Thank you for joining the family.
Thank you for inviting me.
All right, absolutely. We have Ian on the phone from Baltimore. Ian, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Well, I just wanted to share a blackity black history fact.
Yes.
The commonly accepted history would have us believe that Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, was designed by a white man named John Ellicott.
But it was not.
Yes.
Go ahead.
That's who Ellicott City is named after.
Yep.
However, it was actually designed by a black man named Benjamin Banneker, who was able to do things like use the stars to be able to, I don't know if people fully understand what it takes to construct a perfectly horizontal line across the top of Maryland, but it takes a lot of celestial plotting using the stars in order to be able to plot that line. As well as make those straight lines that created the perfect diamond of Washington, D.C. So if you didn't know, now folks know that Washington, D.C. was actually designed by Benjamin Banneker, a black man.
Okay, thank you so much. I mean, you give us a black history fact here. We appreciate you. It's so interesting because if you know, folks are from D.C. and you go to school in D.C., that is an ongoing conversation. Whether it's LaFont, you know, which is LaFont Plaza, whether it's Benjamin Banneker, it is an ongoing discussion. So I appreciate you bringing that to the table here. We have Kofi on the phone from Columbia. Kofi, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing excellent. Thanks for asking. Thank you for your great show you're doing here.
Thank you.
I just want to share, there's books I've been reading here, you know, throughout the month here, but the one in particular I'm talking about here is called The Falsification of African Consciousness, and it's by Amos Wilson. Very good book. And he just breaks down a little bit everything, and one of the things that really struck me is that he talks about, you know, the word economy and on how the Africans, especially the some of the Fulani people over there in Africa, use that economy as relationship building in order to, you know, come together as a bank, sort of, say, here, but they use it amongst themselves to build money into a savings and to borrow money out of that savings to, you know, to incorporate what they call a bank themselves here. But it's, I just wanted to let you know, it's a great book here, you know, if anyone wanted to check it out here. And it just breaks down a lot of things here that really I wasn't aware of. And just kind of one other thing here, kind of come back on what the gentleman just mentioned here about Benjamin Banneker here. He was a part of, his DNA is part of the Dogon tribe, which is a part of Africa, you know, ancient Egyptian Africans that kind of plotted the celestial constellation and the stars, the Orion belts and things of that nature. So I just wanted to share that little tidbit there with you all. Have a good day and keep up the good work.
I appreciate you. Folks, let me just note that the Benjamin Banneker and Washington, D.C. and the design and planning is a story that has been debated, it has been refuted, it has been proved, it has been pulled back for years. This is what I was saying when the caller mentioned that, because historian Silvio Bedini actually, if you believe his work, studied the papers of Benjamin Banneker, studied the publications of Benjamin Banneker, and said that his contributions to the project were embellished. The story was constantly told in different ways. Now, this does not diminish Benjamin Banneker's contribution, but it's interesting that this black man who was working as an assistant to who was working on D.C., developing plans, is conveniently being cut out of the story and saying that his contribution is smaller than what he liked to believe. But Major Ellicott selected Benjamin Banneker as the assistant, and Benjamin Banneker was working on the plan. So believe me, it's been an ongoing discussion about the role that Benjamin Banneker played in the designing of Washington, D.C. 410-319-8888, James from Baltimore, first-time caller. How are you, James? Welcome to the family.
Hey.
Hey.
Yes, I'm from Columbia, but I just moved to Baltimore, okay?
Welcome.
Yes, I want to say something. That, why don't we, maybe you could, they can, all the presidents that, you know, going for president, running for president, they should all should show their taxes for 10 years at least.
Okay.
Donald Trump, everyone.
Yeah,
so Donald
Trump, I agree.
Show his taxes, because he, after he show his taxes, he automatically will be out. He don't want to show for some reason.
Yeah,
so
I
that
agree.
Be, a case that everybody should show their taxes.
I agree. I absolutely agree with that. Do you mean for every single office or just for president?
For every office, really.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. All right, folks, we're going to keep going. We got a lot of calls here. Fred from East Baltimore. Fred, how are you? Oh, wait a minute. No, I'm sorry. We have a quick break here. When we come back, we'll play another round of Chaopoly. We'll have Curtis, we'll have Paul, we'll have Fred, and there will be a line open for you.
You know my soul, look back and wonder, hardly make it over.
Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Happy Black History Month, folks. There's an argument to be made on The Root with Michael Harriet's column. He said, you know, Black History Month is not for black people. Michael Harriet is arguing that Black History Month is for white folks, not black folks, because we know our history. We know our history, and we know the greater, larger narrative called American history, because we understand that Black history is American history. We need to educate folks on Black history, and maybe Black History Month is the month to do that, to share these little-known wonderful facts about Black folks and Black contributions and inventions by Black people and things that Black people have done and things that Black people have said, just so that we can further help people to understand fully the contributions that Black people have made and will continue to make to this country, particularly on today, what would have been Trayvon Martin's 25th birthday celebration. Was cut short when he was 17 years old. I want to play another Chaopoly. This is part two of our Ultimate Black History Month Chaopoly Playbook. Come on, Dre, let's do it.
Born by the river in a little tent. Oh, and just like the river, I've been running ever since. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come.
Mother, mother, there's too many of you crying. Brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah. Father, Father,
you're the capitalist.
Get down. Get down.
Move it in on.
Get it on.
Can't you feel my breath? All up around your neck. Hey, CC. They say you jive and game and can't be changed.
That was not going to be an easy one. So I'm just saying right now, if you're someone where you're thinking that you truly understand Black history and Black music and that you've been holding on tight to your Black car because you know you got something to say, you need to play this Chaopoly. It's part two of the Ultimate Black History Month Chaopoly Playbook. We are helping you to build your Black History Month Chaopoly playlist. We have Joe Bigger on the phone from Gwyn Oak. Joe Bigger, how are you?
I am good and middling and hunky-dory. As always, I hope nothing but the best in your day.
Thank you, sir.
I'm so glad that you brought up this topic. It's funny because I'm super blurred. I am super blurred. So the history of animation and, you know, the caricature of people of color in cinema and other media, this was well needed. Now, with that said, don't get it twisted. Yeah, with everything heading towards the PC, you know, PC field, the way that we're portrayed in things like manga comics, if people don't know what manga are, but they're like the Japanese animated comic books.
Right.
Or Japanese anime. If you look at particularly the Black people as they're portrayed, they still, in the 21st century, 20th and the 21st century, they still draw us as the big pink-lipped, dark-skinned buffoons. You know, Dragon Ball Z. I mean, he's the typical Sambo-looking character. And even though he's supposed to be a master martial artist and teacher, he's still looked upon as a buffoon. And this is internationally. So please remember that, you know, this image of us is distributed internationally. So more so than what we see in the Americas, North America particularly, it's all over the world. Okay, so I need people to bear that in mind. So all of you with kids who are into it,
right,
be mindful. Take a look at it. You know, talk to your kids about it. Okay?
All right. Okay.
Yeah, I'm just saying that.
All right, I appreciate you. Thank you so much, Joe Bigger. We got Paul on the phone from West Baltimore. Paul, how are you?
Doing fine, Dr. K. You know, let me just say this. You know, I'm looking at self-hate.
Okay.
That's been used in our culture for decades. You know, when we used to cut on the TV, I remember being young, and the majority of the television shows, these were all Caucasian people in the show. So, and I remember getting my G.I. Joe dolls and all that when we were young, and they were all Caucasian. You know, and it was embedded in us that, even at a young age, to dislike ourselves to a certain level, because everything that we saw was looked at as being that Caucasian race. We look at it now where we got our African-American women walking around with false hair in their head, making it long, making it blonde to try to blend in And, you know, and that causes self-hate within the individual.
I have a question, Paul. I'm not going to let you continue, but I do have a question. So why is it, in the statement that you made, that there's a need to police the hairstyles of black women? What's wrong with black women who don't have self-hatred but who might want to wear it long, might want to wear it short? We just saw Representative Ayanna Pressley had been wearing wigs because she had alopecia and finally was able to take the wigs off with a lot of work to get to that point. Not everybody who's walking around with the long hair is doing it for self-hatred. Sometimes it's doing it because they actually like it.
Well, that's true, too, but that then take away from our culture and who we really are, is what I'm saying, because when we go to the office, if you're in corporate, you know, you got, that, let me see, that was just our news editor, our anchor, because she wore her natural black hair, she got fired.
Oh,
Did you see that? Now, come on, Dr. K, who are we kidding ourselves, you know, when we look at it? You know, it's even portrayed that when you see a black man with a white woman, and I'm not taking nothing from the Bible, I'm just talking about self-hate. That's just, look how it is embedded in our mind, you know, to say that black women ain't good enough once black men become successful, or to say that black women looking for successful Caucasian men to date outside the race. I mean, we got to really look at self-hate. You know, you get up in the morning, you say, well, I can't go to work because my hair is not the way it's supposed to be. I got to go. I got to get my wig straightened out. I need that long, straight hair in order for me to fit in with that culture, is what I'm saying when I'm talking about self-hate. Now, it gets so bad that, you know, they taught us to hate ourselves just by putting them out in the forefront. That's why it's so easy for us to kill each other and do the things that we do to each other because of that self-hate. If I teach you how to hate yourself, then you'll hate everything that looks like you.
Okay.
Thanks, Dick.
I appreciate you. So, folks, I just need to, you know, Paul put a lot on the table. We got to unpack a little bit of this and not just let it go. One, let's be clear. I think in 2020, we should all make a commitment to stop policing the hair of black women. Black women have the right to wear their hair any way they want. Perm it, straighten it, afro it, lock it, link it, weave it, dye it, wig it. Leave black women and our hair alone. Like, I'm very serious about that, because for some reason, a lot of people who are not black women like to police our hair. You're telling me just because I wear a wig, I don't love myself. And if I want to put my weave in, it's because I have black hatred. Or if I want to, you know, put a wig on that's blonde hair, it's because I want to be with white men. None of that. People should have the right, and when I say people, I mean black women, come on now, should have the right to be whoever we want to be. Like, my heart really went out to Representative Ayanna Pressley when she took off the wig to talk about alopecia. Now, everyone's saying she's so brave, and I get that. I just have women in my family who struggle with alopecia, with that disease where your hair falls out because the hair follicles are burned and your hair doesn't grow back, who have struggled for years to even get to a point where they can take the wig off and shave their hair. Ayanna Pressley, when she took the wig, her hair was also shaved. Alopecia usually happens sometimes in patches. So I think let's stop doing that. Number two, let's also make another commitment in 2020, and let's stop policing who people want to date. People should be free to date anyone they want to date. Just because a sister chooses to date someone of another race or ethnicity does not mean she hates herself. Just because a brother chooses to date someone of another race or ethnicity, it does not mean they hate themselves. Sometimes, folks, we're going to have to free ourselves. I said, you know what? Let me let people live their lives, right? Let me get my hands out of black women's hair. Let me get my nose out of black women's business and let people live their lives. Because sometimes it's not about self-hatred. Sometimes it's just about you hating on them. It's my little 2-cent commentary here, because it burns me up when I hear this conversation about black women and their hair. Man, we got Robert on the phone. Robert, how are you?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Robert. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Listen, you know, we go all the way around the world about everything and everybody except ourselves. Do you know we have a congressional, the first black congressional medal winner right there in our midst? Mm. He's buried right up there in Glendon, right off of Bond Avenue in that old church. Church is almost 150 years old. They got a little cemetery there just for the congregation.
Nice.
And his last name is Augusta.
Augusta. I'll look it up.
Thank you, sir.
I will.
And we got a lot of things going on in Baltimore.
I love that.
Been buried and hidden out.
I like that. I will definitely look that up. Last name is Augusta. We will look up a congressional medal winner. Last name, Augustus. We're looking it up. 410-319-8888. We have Trayvon on the hair. Oh, on the line. Trayvon, how are you? And Gary for Kaopoly. Don't hang up, Gary. I'm coming to you next. Hey, Trayvon. Hey, I'm wanting to talk about hair.
Dr. K, can you hear me?
I can, sir.
Because I stepped out my car. I'm going to the Royal Farm to get me something to drink.
Don't say
as
chicken.
I go home.
Don't say
but
you get
real
chicken.
Quick, you touched my heart when you checked the brother in a good way about the Soul Sisters hair. Yeah. Why I say that? When they had Soul Train, they run around with these wigs and real afros. We wasn't looking at the sisters like that.
Mm.
You understand?
Yeah.
So now all of a sudden that the Yaki becomes a thing. The braids become a thing.
Yeah.
The little pieces that's in the braids become a thing like Stevie Wonder. You understand?
Yeah.
It was no problem. So like I said, I want to say celebration to the young brother Trayvon Martin as a younger
yeah.
Trayvon.
Yeah.
But I want to celebrate you for standing up for the Soul Sisters because you're going to still love that sister if she got here or not. Talk to you later.
Come on. Thank you so much. 410-319-8888. Gary from Pikesville, how are you?
I'm fine. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. So you're calling to play the ultimate Black History Month Kaopoly playbook.
I'm going to give it a shot.
All right, brother. Go ahead.
I think I got these. I might miss that last one, and they're my favorite group, though. Okay. Sam Cooke, Change Gonna Come. Marvin Gaye, What's Going On. Parliament Funkadelic, Chocolate City.
That's absolutely correct.
Yeah,
absolutely
okay.
correct. Yes, congratulations. We got a prize for you, Gary.
All right.
All right, but have you hold on 1 second. Happy Black History Month. Hey, Beverly from Baltimore, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for calling.
I'm not going to be before you long. I was just thinking, I was saying that we as Black people of color, the cavalry's not coming. We're going to have to do this on our own, and we're going to have to start from house to our house, get that in order first.
Mm.
We're going to have to encourage our children, our siblings, and whoever's connected to us. We got to change this thing. We got to concentrate on making ourselves better from the inside out. We're just going to have to do it because there's no help coming for us.
No.
And we have such a short period of time. Education is so important. We have to start with our babies. We got to do this from family to family. Everybody doesn't need the same thing, but we got to do something.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. And you know, Beverly, you know that is my mantra. Nobody is coming to save us.
Nobody
actually have
to
save
us.
Yes, it is real. But you know, I don't think people believe me, Beverly. When I say that, I think people think I'm just making stuff up. I don't think anyone's coming to save us. I really don't.
No, nobody's coming to save us. We're going to have to be innovators for our family. We got to start with the roof over our own head before we go out in the community. We got to start from the inside.
Yes,
we got to start with our own families. We have to start with money. We got to start with everything. We got to start. We have to do groundwork.
We do. We do. And do that groundwork inside of ourselves, too.
Yes. Yes.
You're absolutely right.
The government has failed. And they are planning for our demise, but
right.
It's not going to happen.
They're planning for us to fail.
Do like the old people did. From years ago.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. Folks, I want to note here on Facebook, my Facebook Live page, Arlene Whiting has come in, and she said, for the woman with the employer, Miss T, has she gone to the EEOC physically and put in a complaint? Instead of calling, go physically. Send an email. Does she know Maryland or the state that her employer has their rules and guidelines from? She needs to get the handbook. Look it up. Go to a law library. Look up cases similar to your case. Find cases similar for exactly what you need. And then you can also talk to an attorney who specializes in your situation. You can contact a lawyer referral service and get the information. Arlene, I really appreciate you. And she's saying also, Arlene thinks that a Democratic candidate can win without the black vote. One of the reasons is based on what the candidates will not offer blacks, one of those being reparations. Okay, so we are probably not going to get reparations in any way, shape, or form, folks. I'm getting a little bit disturbed here about the reparations conversation because the only person that was talking about it, Marianne Williamson, in a clear and direct way, and then Julianne Castro, neither one of them are running. We have Miss Beautiful on the phone from Maryland. Miss Beautiful, how you doing, girl?
I'm doing really good. I wanted to tell her, I said, I'm just going to be beautiful today.
I know, that's right. Hey, Miss Beautiful girl.
I want to kind of piggyback off the gentleman that called a second ago with the talking about the hair situation.
Yes. Yes, ma'am.
This is 2020.
Come on.
Love don't have no color.
Mm-mm, tell them.
Hair doesn't make the person. And I've been dating out of my race for years, and I love it. My hair can be nappy, straight, need a perm. We kiss goodnight with a scarf on, whatever. This is 2020, my brother. Wake up.
I know that's right, sister.
Wake up.
I
go
know
sit down,
that's
have
right.
a TV dinner, watch the news, but wake up. It's not going to change.
Okay, I appreciate you. You know, and at some point, let me just say, Miss Beautiful, we got to have a conversation about, you know, the ways in which there are a lot of people who still feel some sort of way when they see. 10 more minutes. I'm going to go ahead and drop this bomb here. So, folks, it's Black History Month 2020. Where do you stand on interracial relationships? Like, does it still bother you? If you see a brother with a sister not of color, I'm going to go ahead and call them SNOCs, a sister not of color, not a sister who is Hispanic, but a sister who is Caucasian or who is Latina, but she also looks like she could be Caucasian. What if she's Asian? Do you have a problem with that? What if it's a sister dating a brother who is of another race or ethnicity? We already had one caller who says it's about self-hatred. I'm saying people should be free to date who they want to date. People should be free to love who they want to love. People should be free to be who they want to be with the person they want to be with, except does it matter if it's your own child? See, now it's a conversation, right? I'm all about people loving whoever they want to love. What if your son brings home an Asian or a Caucasian girlfriend or someone of the same sex, depending upon your child's choices? What if your daughter comes home and the person she loves doesn't look like they've been kissed by the sun? So I just want to know what you think. 410-319-8888. We have let's see, is it Kenya on the phone, the new caller from Owens Mills? Kenya, how are you?
Kenya, yes.
Hello. How are you?
I just wanted to, I had one thing, now I have two things. One thing about the dating outside your race, I don't think it matters. As long as the person treats you right and is good to you, why should it matter who you date or who you marry? Another thing, I just wanted to put a positive spin on the whole conversation about self-hate and everything. I am a mother of a 16-year-old, and her and her friends are proud of themselves. They are proud of their melanin. They know about their history. These girls are doing well in school. They are making plans for college and opening up their own businesses. So our children are doing awesome things and learning about themselves and discovering who they are in this world, even with everything that could possibly go wrong. They are still doing really well, and I just wanted to put that out there.
I like that. I like that. So the children's going to be okay, right, Kenya?
They're going to be fine as long as we continue to educate them and just be truthful and honest with them and pull them up. They are going to be fine.
I'm starting to feel that way. I've been talking to my kid. You know, my kid's in his first year of college, his second semester of his first year. And I was just talking to him the other day. I got off the phone and I realized, and it gave me both, you know, a moment of tears there, but also such incredible joy. I'm like, you know what? My kid's going to be okay. Like, he is going to be okay. He's starting to figure out his place in this world.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. Exactly. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. All right, we have Derek on the phone from Baltimore. Derek, how are you? You want to talk about hair, Derek? How you doing? All right, I'm going to move on from Derek. Let's go to, I think it's Irvin from Baltimore. Irvin, how are you?
I am doing fine.
So what would you like to put on the table?
Oh, I would just like to put on the table your comment about if my kids were home.
Ah,
of a race.
Uh-oh. It's about to go down up in here. Go ahead, Irvin.
It will be fine with me.
Good.
They can date whoever they want, as long as they're treating them right.
I know that's right. I know that's right. Now, here's the thing I thought was interesting because, you know, growing up, my dad, we didn't have a lot of conversation about who to bring home. I just know for him, as a pastor, that was something I would hear more often than around dating someone from another race, maybe because I, you know, grew up in an all-Black environment in D.C., went to an HBCU. But my dad, his big thing was bringing home someone who was unequally yoked. That's what concerned him.
Yeah.
He would say, you know, I don't want you, you should not look to date, not even bring them home. You shouldn't even date someone who has different beliefs than you do. He said, because that is something that ultimately, if you were to marry this person, that's something that would draw a stake through everything. Are you prepared to raise your child in a different religion, a different spiritual belief? In my household growing up, that was very important. And so that was my dad's big thing.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. So I'm glad you have that state of mind. Thanks, Irving. All right. We have Kim on the phone from Baltimore. Kim, how are you?
Great, Dr. K. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Okay. I'm an African-American female and grew up in Baltimore City, live in Baltimore County now. My oldest son is in an interracial marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful wife,
nice.
You know. And prior to him meeting her, he dated mostly Black women. However, there were issues with those things. Sometimes their dads didn't think that my son, who was working a usher job at the time and going to college, actually, he graduated with 3 degrees in the time that it took a normal person to get 1 degree. But they thought that their young girls should be marrying up.
Right.
His wife at the time saw how hard my son was working. And she said, I loved him. And she saw how wonderful he treated me and other people.
Right.
And they clicked as friends. They also were equally yoked because even though she was a different race, they both went to church.
Right.
You know? However, in my family, we have so many different denominations in our family. And it's more about how that person treats you.
Right.
And how you can compromise to make things work and being open and honest with your children and your family members to make it work. Our whole country is divided among so many other things, but if you open up your heart and get to know people for who they are, you'll see how much you have in common.
All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. We have Kevin on the phone. Kevin's a new caller from Annapolis. Kevin, how are you? Welcome to the fam.
How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you.
Yes. I think that, you know, interracial relationships, you know, it's like, who cares? As long as you have that love, that's what matters. Love and respect.
Do you think it matters in terms of a generational thing? Like, I notice it matters less with my sons than with my parents, for example. Boomers versus millennials.
Well, I think, I think as the older generations, because of what they went through, and what they had to deal with,
right,
and the acceptance and not being accepted, because I think you know, they see that as maybe like a stigma to where you're not supposed to be with that person because of, and it comes from not really taking the time or understanding,
right?
Because my mother,
my sister and I, we had different fathers, same mother. Her father's white. He considered me as his son. To him, I was his son.
Right.
They treated me as his son. And when my mother passed, this is how much he loved my mother. When my mother passed, when they loaded her coffin into the hearse, he lay down beside the coffin and wrote the
obituary. Oh, my. That's so beautiful and so sad.
Yeah. So, I mean, the whole color thing.
It's about love.
Yeah, I think we need to move past that.
Okay.
Because we're never going to go forward.
All right. I got to stop you there. Thank you so much, folks. You know, why don't we put a pin in this conversation? Let's not put a period. Put a comma here because we need to pick this up tomorrow. I want to talk about interracial relationships tomorrow. Maybe it's time for us to excise that demon and get to a point where we can accept people based upon, what did Dr. King say? The content of their character and not the color of their skin. It's been an honor and a privilege to serve you in this way. Today with Dr. K, I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Make an appointment. Meet me back here tomorrow at 3 p.m. and let's do it all over again.